Hey everyone, and welcome to this deep dive. We're going to get into a case today that's all about what happens when you have, like a big group lawsuit, one of those class action things. But it doesn't quite go the way some people were hoping it would.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
The case is called Cooper v. Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that one.
It's a Supreme Court decision, and get this, it's from 1984. But hold on, don't go anywhere because it's still super relevant.
Absolutely.
Especially, by the way, if you're at all interested in employment law.
Big time.
Okay, so what makes this case so fascinating? Well, it really boils down to the whole idea of individual rights. You see, just because a class action, those big lawsuits with lots of people, just because one of those might not be able to prove, say, that there was widespread discrimination, well, that doesn't mean that individuals can't still try to find justice on their own.
Right. It doesn't shut the door completely.
All right. So let's set the scene here. We've got the EEOC, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and they're suing the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. And what are they suing for? Alleged racial discrimination.
Okay. Makes sense.
But then, and this is where it gets really interesting, four black employees at the bank, these are the Cooper petitioners, they decide to join the lawsuit. They're saying, hey, this isn't just about us. There might be a bigger issue here.
Yeah, they wanted to represent a whole bunch of employees, basically a whole class, who they thought were experiencing something similar, discrimination, that is.
So they're really thinking big picture.
Right. And the court actually agreed to certify the class, which means they gave the okay for those four employees to maybe potentially speak for a larger group of people. But, and there's always a but, isn't there? After a trial, the judge found that, yeah, okay, there was some discrimination, but only in lower paying jobs.
So not as widespread as the lawsuit was claiming at first.
Right. Not quite the sweeping discrimination they were alleging initially.
So the court is acknowledging that discrimination exists, but maybe not to the extent that was originally claimed.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens next? What about the employees who still believe that they personally were treated unfairly? I mean, does that initial ruling with the class action mean that they're stuck? Can they still do something about it?
That is the question.
That is the question indeed.
And that's exactly what happened. We had six other black employees at the bank. These are called the Baxter petitioners. And they went ahead and filed their own lawsuits, individual lawsuits, alleging racial discrimination.
Wow. So they're saying, hold on a second. We have our own stories to tell.
And that move really raised a big legal question. Does that earlier class action, the one with its limited findings, the one that didn't find that huge widespread discrimination, does that prevent these individuals from going forward with their own cases?
So did the company kind of, get off the hook easy? Was that win, if you want to call it that, was a limited win in the class action lawsuit enough to protect them from having to deal with any more lawsuits?
Well, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals originally said yes, that the class action blocked those individual claims.
Oh, so it seemed like the company was in the clear.
But, and this is a big but, the Supreme Court had something else in mind.
Oh, I knew there had to be a twist.
There's always a twist. So the Supreme Court, and this was a unanimous decision, a big one, they reverse what the Fourth Circuit had decided. They said, no. You have to be really clear about what a class action lawsuit is trying to prove and what an individual lawsuit is trying to prove. They're different.
They're not the same. They're separate.
You got it.
So it's not enough to just say discrimination happened. Each kind of lawsuit has to look at the problem in a different way.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah, it's not that simple. And this is where it gets really, important for anyone who's ever even thought about being part of a class action. What the Supreme Court basically said was the class action in Cooper. That one was really focused on whether there was like a general pattern of discrimination happening at the bank. They wanted to know, was there something wrong with the whole system? Was the system set up to discriminate? They weren't looking at each individual case one by one.
So it was about the big picture, right? Not the individual detail.
Right, exactly. The individual decisions about each employee. That wasn't what this class action was about.
So the class action was asking a big, broad question. But the individual lawsuits, those were about specific situations.
Exactly. And that's why the Supreme Court said the proof needed is different for each type of lawsuit. Think about it. To win a class action, you got to prove there's this huge pattern of bias across the board.
That's a tall order.
It is. But for an individual claim, you only need to prove that there was discrimination in your specific case.
Oh, I see. So it's one thing to say this whole company is discriminatory.
Right.
But it's a whole other thing to say this one manager, this one person discriminated against me.
You got it. And just imagine if every single claim, every single person who thought they were discriminated against had to be part of one giant class action suit.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? That sounds like a nightmare.
Total chaos. The Supreme Court was thinking about that too. They were like, hold on, class actions exist for a reason. They're supposed to make the whole process more efficient, not tie everything up in knots.
Yeah.
They said those class actions, they have a purpose, but they shouldn't stop an individual from seeking justice on their own, you know, separately.
So the Supreme Court was trying to be fair to both sides.
Yeah. They wanted the courts to be able to function.
Right.
But they also wanted to make sure that individuals still had a fair chance. It's a balance, you know.
Oh, for sure. It's got to be tricky to get that balance right.
It is. Oh, and by the way, there's something else. Justice Marshall, even though he agreed with the majority opinion, you know, the main decision, he brought up something important. He said, just because a class action fails to prove that super widespread discrimination, that doesn't mean those individual cases of discrimination just vanished.
Right.
They still happened. And he really emphasized that courts need to look at those individual cases carefully. They shouldn't just brush them aside.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's like, what if you really were discriminated against, but the bigger lawsuit just didn't have enough evidence?
Right.
It wouldn't be right to say you couldn't get justice just because the class action didn't win a certain way.
Exactly. And this case, Cooper, it really highlights that even if a class action doesn't get everything some people were hoping for, that's not the end of the story. Individuals, they still have options. They can still fight for their rights, even if a bigger lawsuit hits a wall. You know?
So it's not game over. There are still possibilities.
That's the point. So what does this all mean for our listeners out there? What's the big takeaway from Cooper v. Federal Reserve Bank?
Yeah. What should people remember about this case?
Well, here's the thing. Just because a company wins in a class action, it doesn't mean they have a free pass to discriminate. They don't get a get out of jail free card. People can still sue them for discrimination, even if a class action against that same employer didn't find that big widespread discrimination.
That's huge. It means even if you're part of a group and that group doesn't succeed in court, you still have individual rights.
You got it. That's what Cooper did. It created this important balance. It said, hey, class actions are useful, but we also have to protect individual rights. That decision has been super influential in the legal system ever since.
It's had a big impact. Now, this particular case, it was all about employment discrimination. But are there other situations where we might see this tension, you know, between class actions and individual rights?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All sorts of situations. Think about things like consumer protection, you know, or environmental law. Product liability cases, too. Anytime a whole bunch of people have been harmed in a similar way, you could definitely see this tension come up.
Can you give us an example, like a real world example?
Sure. Imagine a company puts out a product, you know, something they sell, and it turns out the product is defective.
Oh.
And people get hurt because of it. So someone files a class action lawsuit, but what about that one person who had a really, really bad injury from that faulty product?
Yeah, they might need more compensation than what everyone else is getting in the class action.
Exactly. That's exactly when this whole balance we've been talking about between doing what's good for the whole group and what's right for each person, well, that's when it gets really important. We have to remember that even when people are part of a group, their individual situations, those can be really different. And those individual stories matter. They're important.
So Cooper v. Federal Reserve Bank, it wasn't just about, you know, employment law or whatever. It was setting a precedent for how we think about justice in lots of different situations. It's a big deal.
It is. That case really showed us that just because there's a legal victory, it doesn't mean everything is settled. Sometimes a class action doesn't get everything people wanted. But that doesn't mean the fight for individual rights is over. It can continue. And it should continue.
This has been such a great deep dive. We've covered so much, like the history of the case, how the Supreme Court made its decision, what it all means for other cases, even how these ideas apply to other areas of the law.
Wow. And you know, it's amazing how this one case decided so long ago, back in the 80s, it's still shaping the legal system today. It's a reminder that individual rights matter, even when we're talking about these huge group lawsuits.
So before we finish up, I want to leave everyone with a question. We've talked about the balance the Cooper v. Federal Reserve Bank tried to create, you know, between class actions and individual rights. Yeah. But what do you think happens when what's good for the group, what benefits everybody together, what if that's not the best thing for each individual person in the group? What then?
Ooh, that's a tough one. There's no simple answer there. I mean, it really depends on the details of each situation, and you really have to understand the legal rules involved.
Yeah, that's something for everyone listening to think about. It reminds us that the law isn't always so clear-cut. It's not always black and white. There are always these little details, these gray areas, and that's where things get really interesting, legally speaking.
You said it. It's all about navigating those complexities. We have to figure out how to uphold justice and fairness. It's a challenge.
Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. It's been a fascinating look at this really important case and its impact.
Yeah, I really enjoyed our discussion. It's always good to revisit these landmark cases.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Cooper v. Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. We hope you learned something new.
As always, we encourage you to keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep exploring the law. It's a constantly changing field.
Until next time, stay sharp, everyone.
And keep on diving deep.